I'd like to share an old but short parable that should be quite familiar to you. This is a short story meant to incite moral obligation. Insight moral obligation, but I believe it has biblical insight as well. Once upon a time, quite a long time ago, a pig, a rat, and a cat, and a little red hen lived in a house upon a hill. It was quite a nice little house, and it was so spotless and clean. And whom do you think the pig, the rat, and the cat, and the little red hen to thank for that? The pig? Goodness, me no. The rat? Certainly not. The cat? She was quite too lazy. The little red hen? Of course. She worked and worked to keep the little house on the hill as clean could be. I wonder, thought the little red hen, if someday we could not have a garden, or perhaps plant some wheat or corn. She was quite pleased with the thought. The very next day, the little red hen found a grain of wheat. She was just about to go to the marketing, and she did not want to stop as she was already quite late. So she called to the others, "Who will plant this grain of wheat?" "Not I," said the pig, and he hurried away. "Not I," said the rat, and into the house he scurried. "Not I," said the cat, and he climbed a tree. "Very well, then, I shall do it." The Lord Hen was just at the least bit provoked, but she stopped to plant the grain of wheat. Some time later, the wheat had grown large and ripe. They were all very proud of it. "Our wheat is quite splendid," said the pig. "Our wheat does us credit," it said the rat. "Our wheat is much better than our neighbors," said the cat. Out came the little red hen from the house. "Now who will reap this wheat?" she asked, quite hopefully. "Not I," replied the pig. "I must depart at once." "Not I," said the rat. "Any other day but today." "Not I," said the cat. "I'm sorry, but I am not well." "Very well, then," said the little red hen. "I suppose I must do it myself." Now the wheat was gathered and all ready for the mill. The red hen and thought that perhaps the pig or the rat or the cat might like to take it to the mill. "Here's the wheat ready for the mill," she said. "Who will take it there?" "Not I," said the pig. "It is too far for me to walk." "Not I," said the rat. "That it would be quite too heavy of a load for me." "Not I," said the cat. I am expecting a call from my cousin today." "Very well, then," said the red hen. "I shall do it." So she went off to the mill, singing quite cheerfully on the way. When the wheat came back as fine as white flour, they were all quite proud of it. "Who will bake the bread?" said the red hen. She asked each of them. "Not I," said the pig. "I am very poor at baking." "Not I," said the rat. "I cannot stand an over-hot stove." "Not I," said the cat. "I must have my nap." "Very well, then," replied the little red hen. "I shall bake the bread in the morning." And she did. And when she took the bread from the stove and looked brown and smelled good as good, they all gathered about and smacked their lips. "Who will eat the bread?" asked the little red hen. And she looked as if she were laughing. "I will," said the pig. "Yum, yum. He repeated, for he was afraid that he had not been heard. "I will," said the rat. "Doesn't it look good?" "I will," said the cat. "I always like it fresh and hot." "Oh, but you won't," said the little red hen, as she lifted the nice fresh bread from the stove. "For I shall eat it myself." The pig and the rat and the cat were so ashamed. They never said a word but walked out of the kitchen, their heads hanging lower than they have ever hung before. The end. Okay. Seeing how much of a fan Joshua was of telling parables, I thought it only too ideal to share a parable that could parallel to Joshua himself. I believe that Joshua is much like the red hen. Joshua worked from the ground up to ensure mankind's understanding of Yahweh's law. Joshua cultivated our salvation and ensured our ability to learn Yahweh's favor. Through his blood has our unmerited gift been sown. John 6:35. And Joshua said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that comes to me shall never hunger, and he that believes in me shall never thirst. The bread is offered to those that believe in him. Belief manifests action. To truly say that one believes in him is to do as he says. 1 John 2:3-7. And by this we know that we know him if we guard his commands. This one who says, I know him, and does not guard his commands, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever guards his commands and in his words, truly the love of him, Elohim, has been perfected in him. By this we know that we are in him. The one who says he strays, the one that says he strays in him ought himself to walk even as he walked. Beloved, I write no fresh commands to you, but an old command which you have heard from the beginning. And the old command is the word which you have heard from the beginning. From this scripture, we learn that believing in him requires following him in his ways, which were laid out in the Torah. Following this law, we as people who believe in him show our belief. The little red hen shared the bread with those who took action and proved that they were worthy to partake clearly. Clearly, the other animals believed that they could eat the bread with no work involved. This sentiment can easily parallel to mentality of the world at large. The mainstream believer operates under a misguided understanding of Ephesians 2:8-9. For by favor you have been saved through belief, and that not of yourselves, it is a gift of Elohim. It is not by works, no one should boast. This, among other select misunderstood scripture, leads nominal worshippers to absolve themselves of action. Others elevate themselves as their own Elohim and believes there is no higher power than self. Again, no action is required to prove their faith. One other attitude is the dabbler. That of the dabbler, maybe there is a higher power, maybe there isn't. One can't waste the time learning and obeying the law if there is the authority isn't real and if it is real. But besides, Jesus nailed the obligation to the cross anyway. Win-win. So they would think. There was many other reasons since people rationalized non-compliance with Torah, but these three examples can represent the three animals that excuse themselves from earning the bread. The first example doesn't take into account salvation is not the bread or reward. To put the difference into perspective, refer to 2 Timothy 2:5. And if anyone competes in a game, he is not crowned unless he competes according to the rules. They fail to realize that salvation is merely that allowed them to compete in the first place. The second example, those who elevate self would do well to read James 4:6. But he gives greater favor because of this, he says, Elohim resists the proud, but gives favor to the humble. These that dabble have clearly not cleaved to Revelations 3:15-3:16. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I would that you were cold nor hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I'm going to vomit you out of my mouth. Clearly, the bliss of ignorance is temporary. All of the unmentioned mindsets have scripture that directly rebukes them. But they all ultimately boil down to one outcome, as stated in Matthew 21-23. Not everyone who says to me, Master, Master, shall enter into the reign of the heavens. But he who is doing the desire of my Father in the heavens, many shall say to me in that day, Master, Master, have we not prophesied your name and cast out demons in your name and done many mighty works in your name? And I shall declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who work lawlessness. Any mindset that isn't of Joshua's, who is the Torah, in the flesh is walking a path with a dead end. The mindset of the little red hen to enjoying the bread at the end. The little red hen and decided who was going to eat the bread. Just like 2 Timothy 4:1. In the sight of Elohim and the Master Joshua, Messiah shall judge the living and the dead at his appearing and his reign. I earnestly charge you, as far as Joshua was concerned, there isn't only one mindset that leads to his kingdom. There's only one to enjoying the bread of life. John 14:21. He who possesses my commands and guards them is he who loves me, and he who loves me shall be loved by my Father. And I shall love him and manifest myself to him. In summation, the bread of life that our Messiah Joshua offers to everyone is to be earned with a dedicated heart and a belief in him that manifests a lifetime of emulating his examples. Thessalonians 3:10. For even we were with you, we commanded you this: if anyone does not wish to work, neither let them eat. Thank you. As a side note, I researched online to make sure that there wasn't a sermon already given or topic already touched on. Well, there was one article I found, but argued the opposite point I had to make. The author was dictating that Jesus was the polar opposite of the little red hen. The little red hen offered his fruits of his labors freely, and despite the others' unwillingness to participate, as well as we know, this is both misleading at the best and carries the gravest consequences at worst. Now, thank you.
I would like to call forth Noah King to do the second message.
I think I'm a little too tall. So I'm Noah King, just a short 14-year-old kid. And I'm giving a message on angels. So this is Angels Untangled. So I just wanted to first touch on a poll done by the Barna Research Group in 2000 reflected that 81% of adults polled believe that angels exist and influence people's lives. However, today we're going to look at what many actually believe about angels in contrast to what the Bible teaches. Paul says in Hebrews 13:2, do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some people have entertained angels without knowing it. So today, we're going to cover the basis of angels. We're going to cover several types of angels. And what is angels' purpose? We're going to cover myths about angels. There's a lot of those. And who is the angel of Yahweh? So there are three main types of angels. the seraphim, the cherubim, and the archangel. So what do we know about the seraphim? We know they are mentioned in the book of Isaiah, chapter 6. They serve a special purpose for Yahweh, and they have six wings. Isaiah 6:2. Above it stood the seraphims. Each one had six wings. With twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. So the cherubim, what do we know about them? The Bible mentions cherubim more than 60 times. Golden images of cherubs are integrated into the design of the Ark of the Covenant, Exodus 25:22. The first mention of cherubs is found in Genesis 3:24. So he drove out the man, and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubims, in a flaming sword which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. Psalm 18 mentions that Yahweh rode upon a cherub, and we read in Ezekiel 1:5-10 of their likeness. So there's a picture of cherubim. Ezekiel 1:5-10. Also out of the midst thereof came the likeness of four living creatures, and this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man, and every one had four faces, and every one had four wings, and their feet were straight feet, and the sole of their feet was like the sole of a calf's foot, and they sparkled like the color of burnished brass. And they had the hands of a man under their wings, on their four sides, and they four had their faces on their wings. Their wings were joined one to another. They turned not when they went every one straight forward. As for the likeness of their faces, they four had the face of a man, the face of a lion on the right side. They four had the face of an ox on the left side. They four also had the face of an eagle. So here's a picture of the Ark of the Covenant, a classic image. And there I will meet with thee, and I will commune with thee from above the mercy seat. For between the two cherubims, which are upon the Ark of the Testimony, of all things which I will give thee in commandment unto the children of Israel. And that's from Exodus 25:22. So some might ask, why are there angels on top of the Ark of the Covenant? And because we are not commanded to make any graven images. And you can find that in Exodus 24. Based on scripture in Revelation 11:19, we see that it's quite likely that real cherubim sit on the Ark of the Covenant in heaven. Because everything in heaven is a replica of earth. Or everything on earth is a replica of heaven. Revelation 11:19. And the temple of Elohim was opened in heaven. And there was seen in his temple the Ark of his Testament. And there were lightnings and voices and thunderings and an earthquake and great hail. So the archangel. In 1 Thessalonians 4:16 we read, "For the Master himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of an archangel, and with the trump of Elohim." Only two of them, Michael and Gabriel, are mentioned in the Bible by name. Michael, an archangel, cast Satan out of heaven. And here we read of that. Revelation 12:7-9. "And there was a war in heaven, Michael and his angels going forth to war with the dragon, and the dragon warred in his angels, and they prevailed not. Neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast down, the old serpent, he that is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was cast down to earth, and his angels were cast down with him." So what is the purpose of angels? There's three main things that they do. They are messengers, they are protectors, and they are worshipers. So messengers. From Webster's, we see the definition of messengers. One who bears a message or does an errand. And in Luke 1:26-33, we read, "And in the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent from Elohim unto a city of Galilee, named Nazareth, to a virgin espoused to a man whose name was Joseph, of the house of David, and the virgin's name was Mary. And the angel came in unto her and said, Hail, thou art highly favored, Yahweh is with thee, blessed art thou among women. And when she saw him, she was troubled at his saying, and cast in her mind what matter of salutation should be. And the angel said unto her, Fear not, Mary, for thou hast found favor with Elohim. And behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb, and bring forth a son, and shalt call his name Yahshua. He shall be great, shall be called the Son of the Highest. And Yahweh Elohim shall give unto him the throne of the father of his father David. And he shall reign over the house of Jacob forever. In his kingdom there shall be no end. And there we see that's a very important message by a very important messenger. So angels were also protectors. In Daniel 6:22 we read, "My Eloah hath sent his angel, and hath shut the lion's mouths, that they have not hurt me, for as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, I have done no hurt." Psalm 34:7 reads, "The angel of Yahweh encampeth round about them that fear him, and delivereth them." Angels were also worshippers. "And I beheld, and I heard the voice of many angels round about the throne and beast and the elders. And the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000, and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, 'Worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing.'" So there are a lot of myths about angels. Many believe that when we die, we become angels. This simply isn't true. If you look in 1 Corinthians 6:3, we read, "Know ye not that we shall judge angels? How much more things that pertain to this life?" So angels are judged just like any man. And that's a classic picture. It's a common belief that angels float around on pillow clouds and play harps. It is. And this isn't factually based. Most of the time, angels operate in the spiritual realm. And when they do operate in the physical realm, they often say, "Fear not." If we look in Daniel 5:6, we see a description that would cause fear in us. Daniel 5:6. "Then I lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed with linen, whose loins were girded with fine gold of Upaz. His body was like that of beryl, and his face as the appearance of lightning, and his eyes as lamps of fire. And his arms and his feet were in color to polished brass. The voice of his words like the voice of a multitude." And a classic example, I'm sure none of the kids understand this, but I don't really understand it either. But I'm sure most people do. And another one. So while we don't really know what angels look like, and obviously all of these are artistic interpretations, if you look at the text alone, we see that if an angel were to appear to us, we might definitely find some comfort in their words, "Fear not." So who is the angel of Yahweh? There are many mentions of the angel of Yahweh in the Bible. Let's first break down this term to delve deep into what it really means. Angel comes from the Hebrew word malak, and literally translates as messenger. The word "of" is not in the Hebrew text, so the real word would be Malak Yahweh, also known as Messenger Yahweh. So who is this angel of Yahweh? There are many references in Scripture about humans having interaction with the angel of Yahweh, but we know that Yahshua said in John 6:46, "No one has seen the Father except one who is from Elohim. Only he has seen the Father." So clearly the angel of Yahweh is not the Father. Whomever the angel is, he has the authority to operate in the name of Yahweh. Moses encountered the angel of Yahweh in the burning bush. So clearly, the angel of Yahweh is not human. So we could do 100 sermons on who the angel of Yahweh is, but for time's sake, let's cut to the chase. Based on the evidence that Yahshua presented, the Malak Yahweh can only be one person, Yahshua himself. So today we learned just a little bit about angels. Obviously, there is so much more to be untangled in Scripture. I would encourage you guys to go do your own research on these mysterious beings. When you really get in deep, you find that angels are like superheroes. And superheroes are pretty groovy. Thank you.
I'd like to call forth Austin Shields to do the closing prayer.